Good morning and welcome to Backchat. I'm Hugh Chewerton, your co-host today is Danny Gittings. Danny, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So, the talks planned for this afternoon have been called off after the Chief Secretary, Carrie Lam, said they would not lead to a constructive outcome. Protest organisers, as we've been hearing, have responded by calling for a rally tonight at 7.30, but the government insists that the discussion must not be linked to a decision, any decision on retreating from protest sites. Meanwhile, the Democratic Party has asked the ICAC to investigate claims made that CY Lung hid a deal with the Australian company UGL. So, where do we go from here? Have attitudes to occupy change, do you feel? Do you think it's now time perhaps to use force to remove some barricades? Give us a call with your thoughts and questions. Our number is 233-88266. You can text 63935925, email backchat@rthk.hk, or go to our Facebook page, Backchat on RTHK Radio 3, and comment there. Joining us in our central studio is David Webb, shareholder activist, founder of website.com. We hope to be joined soon by Edward Chin, a hedge fund manager, organised the Occupy Central Banking and Finance Group, and Andrew Chu, who's a mediator, an accredited mediator, assessor, and vice president of the Hong Kong Mediation Centre. And later we're going to be speaking to Stanley Lau, chairman of the Federation of Hong Kong Industries. With us here in Kowloon Tong, Stefan Ortmann, who's visiting assistant professor in the Department of Asian and International Studies at the City University of Hong Kong. Good morning to you all. Gentlemen, David Webb, let's start with you, maybe, and the issue of CY Lung and UGL. What's your take on that? Do you think that laws have been broken? How does it seem?
I think
to
they
you?
May have been. Yes, it's certainly worth investigating. There's a serious issue, first of all, under the Prevention of Bribery Ordinance, and this is not as chief executive, but as a person, as a director of DTZ Holdings, which was in financial difficulties for a couple of months before it was in what's called a prepackaged transaction in a single day. The board gave it to the administrators, who then immediately sold all the assets. And that's a standard arrangement. But in that kind of situation, the question is the administrators who are trying to maximize the return for creditors and possibly for shareholders, they have a duty to look at all the possible options and decide what's the best option? Is the deal on the table the best option? Are the terms fair and reasonable? So they need to know all the facts about where the money's going, whether the buyer is paying perhaps, in an extreme situation, $1 for the assets and $100 million to all of the directors and management for coming over and staying with the company, because that would, in the administrator's view, probably look like an unfair deal for the creditors. So that's why the administrator needs to know all the facts. And from what we know so far, Ernst & Young seems to be saying that they didn't know all the facts.
It's interesting, isn't it? Most people focusing on possible conflict of interest.
Well, that's a second issue. I'll come on to that.
But what you're saying, actually, when you choose the first issue to raise, is in a sense nothing to do with him being chief executive at all. It's something that could affect
it's to do with the duty of agency of a director to his principal, which is the company and its administrators in this case. And he signed this letter in Hong Kong, apparently, because it was witnessed by a Hong Kong secretary. So it's certainly within the scope of the Prevention of Bribery Ordinance. So the question is whether he obtained an advantage in return for future behaviour in terms of being available to give advice and so forth. Without the knowledge and consent of his principal.
So that's
the ICAC's first issue to look at.
And
it's £4 million, which, by comparison, his annual salary was about £400,000 plus bonuses, and they were mainly paid in deferred shares, which turned out to be not worth anything when it went into bankruptcy or administration. So it's quite a substantial amount of money.
What was the purchase price then?
The purchase price was about £75 million. So there's your comparator. The contract.
It's not a large proportion, is it? It's quite a small proportion.
Well, we don't know how many other people got these deals, whether he was the only person in the firm, and why is it that the chairman of DTZ says he didn't know anything about it?
No, they say it was this kind of thing is standard commercial practice from your experience in the world. I mean, we're not saying it's legal in this particular case, but it is true that this sort of general arrangement is standard commercial practice in a takeover situation. Would that be a reasonable...
I wouldn't say it was standard. I would say it's not unprecedented. But he was probably already subject to some non-compete and non-poach clauses in his service agreement before he left the company. And this, if he didn't have such a long obligation, maybe, this extended it to 24 months. But at least part of the payment, the £4 million in two installments in 2 years, at least part of that must have related to the additional commitments that he made to be available to give advice to promote the business of UGL, should he be required to do so. And that's kind of an insurance-type arrangement. You don't have to actually give the advice to be paid for being available to give the advice.
Okay.
So then the question there is, did he declare any of that to the Inland Revenue in Hong Kong for tax purposes? Because although termination payments are exempt under the Inland Revenue Ordinance for salaries tax purposes, there is also... If you're paid anything for other things, then that's a taxable activity.
Yeah, I believe the Chief Executive's Office did answer that last night, and they said that he paid tax on the bonus. But
well, that's different. There was a £1.5 million bonus that he may not have got because the company was in financial difficulties, and UGL said, we will make sure that you get it. But that was in relation to past performance, and he would have been taxed on that,
anyway.
Yes. But the question is, of this £4 million, how much of it related to the additional commitments, and did he declare that and pay tax on it?
Okay, let's just quickly move on to the issue of any conflict of interest as chief executive, right? You're saying there's a second issue,
yes,
where he may have broken the law there.
Well, the unfortunately, as far as I can tell, the... disclosure requirements to the Executive Council Secretariat, and he's president of Exco by being chief executive. There's no legal structure behind those. It's more of an honor system. But I do think that he should have disclosed that he was under a contract that provided future remuneration with a commercial company, and there's basically a slot for that in the form. You can interpret the form to decide where to put that. But the spirit of the disclosure is that if you've got a financial relationship with a commercial entity, you should disclose that. And
doesn't sound like you're saying he broke the law on that issue, though. You're just saying he should have done it.
Well, then there's a separate issue, which is the basic law, which requires that the chief executive be dedicated to his duties. If he's being receiving money on the side for things that he might have to do if called upon by UGL, then there's a question of whether he is in fact dedicated.
He didn't do any, did he?
No, but that's not the point. I mean, if you're under contract and obliged to perform services when required. For example, you know, they call you up and say, we'd really like to arrange a meeting in China in this city that we haven't yet opened an office. Could you call up the mayor and see if you can, you know, help open doors for us or something like that? You know, he would have had to do that as long as it didn't cause any conflict. He did add a caveat to that, but it would have spent some of his time doing that. And I don't think any chief executive should be under contract. I mean, imagine or even a chief secretary for that matter. I mean, if they were under a contract to provide services to a property developer, for example, and to provide information from time to time.
Hypothetically
speaking, yes.
Okay, Edward Chin is the head fund manager, organizer of Occupy Central. Mr. Chin, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Hi, thanks for joining us. So, I mean, you're a businessman as well. You obviously have a vested interest in this. But is this a political matter, do you think, really? Do you think this is a kind of like a technical breach or a technical, you know, a minor infraction of the rules, do you think? Or do you think this is anything substantial behind this?
Honestly, you know, like I have been spending a lot of time in the last few days, more so talking to the students together with some of people from the Catholic faith. I'm more concerned about whether the students can stand the sun, and also sometimes when it rains. And you know, when
so you're not worried about CY London UGL
issue with CY just came out less than 72 hours ago.
Okay, you know, let me put it another way then.
Surprised. Actually, I met the journalist who disclosed this once at the Foreign Correspondents Club. But, you know, if you go way back to 20 to 23 years, I had a brief broadcasting career back in the early 90s, and CY was one of my guests. Now, that was only 3 years after Tiananmen. I want to mention this on air. I asked him about two things. First is whether the crackdown that was done 3 years ago, that was back in 1991, 92, whether the Chinese Communist Party, they should apologize to the people. Now, of course, he was an up-and-rising political star back then. Second thing I asked him was whether we could still uphold our freedom of speech. And freedom of press And as you know, like 5 weeks ago, they just cut my column at Hong Kong EJ just out of the blue. And now okay, get back to your question whether they should investigate this into further detail.
On. You need to put your headphones on so we can hear you.
I think the UK regulator... And also Australian regulator and probably Hong Kong. I don't know where the contract was signed, but definitely a good source to go into is to talk to the journalist who published that report.
Okay,
Garnet, right? I think is the name.
Yeah, but and the journalist himself has said that this was leaked to him literally just last Sunday. Do you share the suspicions of many people in Hong Kong? You see this kind of thing all over Facebook that this was deliberately leaked. Many people even say it was leaked by the central government. As an excuse to bring down CY Leung?
There is a likelikelihood. I don't know whether it's a strong likelihood.
But, I mean, that's about the biggest rumor in town right now, isn't it?
You know, they always have this plan A and plan B within the CCP, right? So that could be. That could be. You know, I'm not saying that it's not unlikely at all. So,
were you more optimistic that CY Leung will be removed as chief executive when you heard about this story?
I think if he is removed, definitely... a lot of the, you know, anger from the streets, could be subsided, to be honest, because I think even right now, I'm one of the first 10 supporters of Professor Benny Tai's movement. I think up till now, it's still very orderly. The university students, they have shown a lot of good gesture already to the government. But who got the upper hand? Definitely the government. And I was honestly a little bit disappointed when Carrie Lam announced that she called off the meeting. But if CY is let go, and then the CCP, the Communist Party, they have to save face too. So by having this to be leaked out, you know, I think it's a good way.
You say that the protests are very orderly, but Occupy Central, the Federation of Students, can't control them. I mean, the Federation of Students trying to reopen Queensway. Queensway's just got a handful of protesters on it, but the protesters there refusing and essentially saying there's nothing they can do about it.
You know, like our banking and finance group, we have 80 people in investment banking, hedge funds, long funds, and broking, and even some from the regulatory bodies on a personal basis. So what we think we will do is we just talk to individual cells, you know, like individually and spend the time when get off from work. You know, they are, after all, they are kids and they are our future leaders. But if you use force again, if you use a tear gas canister, that's the worst thing to do. That's why they call this a peaceful umbrella movement. It's the most polite way to express our discontent to the Hong Kong government and also to Beijing. And honestly, I think this is more like the CCP versus the Hong Kong people than CY. CY could be treated, or people look at him as a puppet.
If CY is moved aside, this doesn't solve the structural issue of the lack of democracy here. You're just replacing him with another illegitimate chief executive with no electoral mandate. So I don't think it's really about the people, although I do think his probability of surviving till Christmas has gone down significantly after the last events.
Okay. Stefan Ortmann is with us, as I say, a political scientist from City University. Good morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
I think you're one of the areas that you're interested in is comparisons of Hong Kong and Singapore.
Mm-hmm.
There's also been comparisons drawn by the German president, I think, yesterday, between the situation in Germany, between the protesters in East Germany,
mm-hmm.
I guess in 1989 and 1990, and the protesters in Hong Kong. What about... First of all, what do you make of what's been happening? What do you make about comparison, say, with Singapore?
Okay. That's a very broad question.
Yes.
But I think that I think the Hong Kong situation is unique in comparison to other situations, like in East Germany. Even though they faced a very strong state, the East Germany was already in decline, and the prospect of coming into West Germany was actually there, at least in the mind of the people. Here in Hong Kong, the city is under the Chinese. China is on the rise economically, is powerful at the moment, and has the support or economic support of many other countries. So, Hong Kong is very small, and it's very difficult for Hong Kong to. do any change or be different from mainland China. It's more like it's getting under control increasingly. So I think that the movement is in a very difficult situation because it does not have the power to make any change. And the Hong Kong government also has no power to make any change because it is under the control of the central government as well. So as the chief executive said in that letter to the New York Times, he has... He seems to say that he has power, institutional power, but in fact, actually, he's quite weak because he's controlled by the central government and also under pressure from the people. So he has absolutely a very difficult situation. So maybe for him, there's also a way to get out of it. Yeah, but a next person would definitely be not in a better situation. I don't even think that it's hard to find anyone who's willing to do this kind of job, but I'm not sure. Yeah.
Well, we don't have any shortage of ambitious hopefuls in Hong Kong, so we can find them. Whether they can do the job is another matter.
That's the problem, yeah.
It's an interesting you drew your attention to that, the letter, because there's a funny sentence in it, isn't there? The letter to the New York Times, right. By the chief executive. It says, he's trying to explain the system in Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. The chief executive enjoys a far higher level of institutional power than the mayors of Western democracies.
It's a very invalid comparison, because we're not talking about a mayor. We're talking about, effectively, the governor of a state in the United States, for example. And states, of the 50 states in the United States, each have their own Congress, their own Senate and House of Representatives. And they make their own local laws. They raise their own local taxes. Hong Kong, in that way, is very similar. Mm-hmm. If we choose to pass a law on, labeling of beverages or something, then we can do that. And so it's a false comparison because, of course, the states of America do elect their governors and they do elect their congresses and they don't have to be approved by the President of the United States or the U.S. Congress.
Well, the way it's phrased in this letter, you see, because the second half of the sentence is, the chief executive enjoys a far higher level of institutional power and is accountable to Beijing and the people of Hong Kong. Not but is accountable or any other sort of conjunction. It's and. So it's a bit odd way of putting it.
Yeah. It's just a recitation of what the basic law
says. Yeah, it is
says.
Basically just repeating the language from the basic law.
He also used a little bit of subterfuge there, hinting that we have an electoral college, and that's a American speak for you have one too. So that makes it all right. But of course, their electoral college is basically elected by universal suffrage from each state. They each have a quota of members in the college, and that gets reflected through into the college vote. So although it may look a bit antiquated, it is at least subject to universal suffrage, whereas our electoral college is rigged, and Beijing knows that. And that's
are you saying then the protesters are powerless? There's no point in going on? The Hong Kong government is powerless? It can only follow what the CPG?
And the problem is that you still have to do something, yeah? And it's not that you... if you give up, you have lost already. So I think one of the points is to draw the attention of the world, and they have at least achieved that. Media from around the world has been flocking to Hong Kong. Yeah, I've been inundated by interviews from German media, so there has been significant interest in what's going on in Hong Kong, which hasn't been seen in a long time. Yeah, so it's... I think that's quite significant.
Okay, well, in terms of trying to find a solution, let's bring in Andrew Chu, who's a mediator, in fact, vice president of Hong Kong Mediation Centre, and I believe you're also Eastern District Councillor. Good morning, Mr. Chu.
Good morning, everyone.
Well, mediation, your job is to try and solve intractable disputes, isn't it? I mean, that's what you do professionally. And I've heard all kinds of mediators saying that they're trying to think whether you can apply the same approach here to the deadlock between government and protesters. What do you think? Can mediation work in this environment?
Yeah. First of all, I would like to say that mediation works for a lot of areas. But no matter it's a public dispute, for example, in Australia and the United States, so some kind of public issue, they will the state government, they will send a mediator to as a facilitator to talk with those affected residents, so come up their concerns so that the problem can be solved. But in Hong Kong nowadays, the umbrella movement is related to the constitutional reforms in Hong Kong. That is not a normal public issue. And for our Hong Kong Mediation Centre, in our training course materials, we have some sort of non-suitability checklist for those issues, whether it is not too suitable to use mediation completely in the situation. Because this umbrella movement with the dialogues with the government, that this dispute some sort of is compromising difficulties in there, because for the position in the government, they have not get the full authorization, such as to withdraw for the decision making from the People's National Conference. For the student, they their needs is very clear. That is, they would like to have a civil nomination. They would like to have a real democracy. So in this situation, we cannot use mediation to in this so diversified disputes. But I would like to point out that in the general public, we need to create a better atmosphere for both both parties to come up to sit down in a peaceful way to do not have too much emotional.
So how would you advocate doing that?
So now in this situation, these 2 days development for the movement, we can say that the students, the Federation of Students, they would like to have the dialogue with government, but because they know that they are not empowered because they just students. So they would like to train to create more power and to empower themselves, just like to launch some non-cooperative movement. So in the government point of view, they try to come down to not to positioning to try to talk with students, but they will think that in this situation, oh, those students seems that our common ground is changed. So they think that this is not a suitable time.
Well, this is nonsense, though. I mean, yeah. I couldn't see any good reason in Carrie Lam's statement last night, and I left myself wondering.
I mean, you posted on Facebook, didn't you, this morning? You said you have to worry who's more grown up.
Yes, because the students have been ready for dialogue for days. The government's been dragging the whole thing out. I suspect that, that they may have been bluffing all along that they really wanted to have talks. They just wanted to drag things out so that the protests diminished on the streets and put themselves in a position to then come down and arrest the remaining
people.
Why
not? That's a very sensible thing to do,
isn't
it?
Yeah, but, well, it's rather...
it's a peaceful way to
Machiavellian, though, to say we want to have talks with you.
Yeah, and we'll wake up.
Come on, they wouldn't be the first to insincerely enter into dialogue.
Right, so and this happened at the 12th hour, a week ago, Thursday night. And then basically they spit the dummy and walk away from the talks, and it may have something to do with the latest conflagration around CY Leung as well, that they didn't want to be interrogated live in a forum by the students about that. They'd also put themselves into a very intransigent position by saying that, well, the talks have to be based on the NPC's 2017 decision, and so I'm going to explain what that means to you, and then we can have a dialogue. And then finally, last night, she says, well, of course, the talks are not in any way connected with the cessation of street protests, we can't talk if you're going to connect them to the continuation or ending of the street protests, which of course is the reason that they agreed to talks in the first place. They wouldn't have invited them round for meetings otherwise. So I think the students need to regroup, hold their ground. They're going to have a rally today in Harcourt Road this evening, I think, at 7:30, and I expect they'll get a lot of people coming back to say, "Come on, the government needs to." Talk sincerely about these issues, because they're not going to go away. I mean, if this protest fades, there'll be more in future. The underlying issue is that Hong Kong's freedoms that we have of speech and assembly and the media are incompatible with an authoritarian form of government. It's the only place in the world where we try to combine them that way. China has the other option none of these freedoms and an authoritarian government, and that works at least for periods of decades until the economy can't support it anymore. And other places have all those freedoms and democracy, but you don't see the other two possibilities anywhere.
Singapore?
I'm going there next month, and I do have a view on which box they're in, and I'm not willing to say.
What kind of visa do you have for visiting Singapore? you have to have a special visa if you want to say anything on politics while you're there.
Seriously. There you go. That's why I'm not willing to say. And that tells you which box they're in, doesn't it, really?
So, okay, David Webb, I'll give a plug for your website, and any of you interested in more, have a look at One Hong Kong, Two Possible Outcomes on David Webb's website. A very interesting table looking at these different combinations of democracy, no democracy, civic freedoms and no freedoms.
All right. We're going to break for the news at 9 o'clock. We'll be back in just about 4 minutes' time, as it is now. Backchat@rthk.hk is our email address. We'll also be joined, we hope, by Stanley Lau from the Federation of Hong Kong Industries. We want to hear from you as well. You can email backchat@rthk.hk with your thoughts and your questions and your comments. Okay, MT in an email says, the students state that all they want is the government to talk with them. Yet when this demand is agreed to, they call for an escalation of the protests. Surely their reaction should have been to disband the protest to show their sincerity. But the reality is that the student leaders are not in control and their demands unrealistic. They are being manipulated by the likes of Lee Chuck Yan, Jimmy Lai and others. The silent majority have seen enough. I fear for the ordinary and naive misled students. This will not end well, says MT. Email address backchat@rthk.hk. The weather before the news. Now, mainly cloudy, dry with sunny periods during the day today, and the maximum temperature about 29 degrees. That looks sunny periods forecast for the next couple of days, and it's going to be slightly cooler early next week. The readings at the moment, the air temperature is at 25 Celsius, and the relative humidity is pretty low. It's at a comfortable 61%. Back in 3 minutes' time.
Rather than Border Force staff.
You're listening to the news on RTHK.
Welcome back. This is Back Chat on a Friday morning with Danny Gittings and me, Hugh Chiverton. As your hosts, we're talking about the Umbrella Movement, about the talks which are not going to be happening this afternoon, but the rally which has been called for tonight in Umbrella Square, as they've renamed Harcourt Road. We have with us Andrew Chu in our central studio, accredited mediator and assessor, vice president of the Hong Kong Mediation Centre, as well as a district councillor. Edward Chin, a head fund manager and organiser of the Occupy Central Banking and Finance Group. David Webb, a shareholder activist, founder of website.com, and Stefan Ortmann, who's a visiting assistant professor in the Department of Asian and International Studies at the City University of Hong Kong, with a particular interest, I think, in Singapore and in Hong Kong. You can email us, backchat@rthk.hk. You can comment on our Facebook page as well, backchat on RTHK Radio 3 is where you'll find that, or you can text us, 6393 5925. We'd very much like to hear from you. We're also joined now by Stanley Lau, who's chairman of the Federation of Hong Kong Industries. Just a couple of emails maybe before we talk to Mr. Lau. Jalal says, I cannot agree that mediated talks would be futile between the protesters and the government. The Hong Kong government cannot give the protesters everything they want, but they can do something. For example, they could agree to relay these students' concerns to the Central People's Government. They could also agree to hold a new consultation or public forum on reform in a genuine way, says Jalal. Rick says, I have had 2 speeding tickets in the last 10 days after rushing around and being late due to the Muppet Parade. I wonder if I can just ignore them. Can I go and block a road or two and avoid prosecution? Get the police in there and remove their illegal roadblocks.
I'm wondering if,
and lock them up, says Rick.
How can you be late if you're speeding? I mean, it sounds like there's no congestion if you're able to speed.
Well, you're speeding because you are late, David Webb. I mean, that's, you're trying to get there because you presumably
late because
had to
drive of the congestion.
Or you might have been diverted, right? Because so many roads on Hong Kong Island are closed.
Craig has a couple of comments. Okay, Craig has a couple of comments. First of all, on the issue of CY and UGL, perhaps the timing of this news is rather convenient as it allows him an opportunity to resign and allow Occupy to end and for society to move on, says Craig, who also says, remember Tony Chan, the will fraudster, now serving prison time. He had the tax authorities investigate him and ultimately demanded tax on his earnings and fees. Why are the same tax authorities not knocking on CY's door? Asks Craig on Lantau. Thanks very much indeed for those comments. Backchat@rthk.hk is our email address. Mr. Lau from the Federation of Hong Kong Industries, good morning.
Yeah.
Hi, thanks for joining us today. What do you make about the talks being called off?
Sorry, Sorry, say again.
Yeah, what do you make of the decision by Carrie Lam to not have the talks today?
Well, I think, you know, the problem is that, you know, if the student unit, youth, I mean, the Federation of of Students, they have, you know, conditions, you know, before opening the dialogue, I think, you know, it will be more difficult. Difficulties, you know, to the government for, you know, discussing with them. So, of course, we would like to see that, you know, there is a dialogue and discussion, you know, between the students and the government. But in case, you know, it cannot be happened, you know, this afternoon, I think, you know, it will affect, you know, definitely, you know, the situation of Hong Kong.
Which of your members have been most affected by this? I mean, some businesses are doing quite well, and other businesses out in the new territories are pretty much unaffected. So which of your members are suffering the most?
Well, I think, you know, with this, I mean, the Occupy movement, I think most of the business in central or in the areas, you know, that they occupied, you know, have been affected, you know. They are mainly covered, you know, the service sectors, you know, such as the retail shops and also the, you know, I mean, the logistic, you know, industries, you know, definitely, you know, have been affected by all this movement.
It's a relatively small impact, though, isn't it? I mean, and some of it's just displacement. So if you can't go to a branch of a chain in Admiralty because it's harder to get to, you go to another branch of that chain somewhere else. And also, I think there's been quite a lot of activity by fast food people around the protest zones. They've done rather well. Convenience stores and fast food chains have been.
And fast food chains
business.
Are rather small margins compared to luxury shops in Central, though, aren't they?
Well, you know, our heart bleeds for the likes of Chanel and so on. I mean, you know, I think we can worry about that as a subsidiary issue.
Yeah.
The bigger issue here is what's the drag on the economy caused by the lack of democracy and, you know, the dynamism that would come from competing policies implemented by an elected chief executive. Wouldn't we be doing a lot better, for example, if we allowed competing stock exchanges and, you know, if we did various other things that would increase competition here? So there's you know, all of that benefit is far greater than the small impact of these protests.
Okay, let's Stanley Lau come back in here. Stanley Lau.
Yes.
Yeah. You. Sorry, go on.
Yes. Yeah. Please. Yes.
Yeah. You feel that there is a significant economic impact. David Webb saying that people just go into other shops instead, and the economic impact is not really so great.
Well, I think, you know, if your shops, you know, are located, you know, in those areas, such as in MOT, Central, or Crossway Bay, or Mongkok, etc., I think, you know, the business must be affected, you know, seriously. And then the, of course, you know, you know that, you know, all this, you know, the rent of these shops, you know, still we have to pay, and then we have to pay the salary to our employees. And then the all the other, you know, expenses still we need to pay. And unfortunately, there will be no customers or consumers to come to these areas, you know, for purchasing, for shopping, etc. So I mean, that will be a great loss.
How long before you think some shops or some employers are going to either dismiss staff or put them on unpaid leave? How long do you think they continue before they resort to those kind of options?
Well, I think, you know, of course it depends on, you know, some of the the shops belong to the big groups or chains group, and probably, you know, they can last a little bit long, but in case, you know, their individual shops or the SME, probably, you know, they will be, they are facing a lot of difficulties, you know. So, I mean, if this kind of problem to happen, I mean, to be continued, you know, for another weeks or even, I mean, the 2-3 weeks more, then will be, I would see that, you know, some of these kind of small shops, you know, have to be closed down.
How would you end it then, Mr. Lau?
Yes.
How would you solve this?
Sorry, I cannot hear you well.
How would you end this then? Would you move in and take down the barricades and arrest people?
Well, I think, you know, we would like to see that, you know, both the government and the students, you know, are able to sit down to talk, to discuss, and then let, you know, the students or occupied people, you know, they can live, you know, the place, the areas where they are, and then the we would like to see, you know, things getting back to normal as soon as possible.
That's what you'd like to see, but you know that it's not going to happen voluntarily. There are no talks now. There's only one way the protesters are going to be removed from the streets, and that is forcibly. Is that something you support?
Unfortunately, you know, when we heard, you know, the announcement of the government yesterday night, you know, and then we are disappointed that, you know, the dialogue cannot be opened, cannot be started between the government and the students. And then I think, you know, so this five, you know, movement, problem cannot be solved in the near future. That's, we don't want to see it. I'm afraid that, as I just mentioned before, that if this movement, you know, is going to be continued for another weeks or months, you know, definitely, you know, a lot of our traders, the retailers, or I mean the people, or even the employees who are working in these subsectors, you know, will be greatly affected.
Okay, so let me ask you again, if that's afraid, would you and your members support the use of force, the use of tear gas again to clear the streets, if you're so afraid about it continuing? Yes or no?
Well, I think, you know, I agree that, you know, in case, you know, worse come to worse, I mean, if there's still a small number of people there still, you know, occupy, you know, the streets or the roads, you know, and then I think the government and the police, you know, should use the minimum force, you know, to clear the road, you know.
They're only going to come back, aren't they, Mr. Lau? Until we solve this problem, there'll just be more protests.
Let's go to Edward Chin, because you've been out on the streets perhaps more than any of us. I was out on the streets. I spent quite a long time actually out on the streets in Central Admiralty last night. And one thing that struck me is that the protest groups at the blockades on the edge are now much better organised than they were a few days ago, especially on Queensway. They were even wearing some kind of identity symbol. I mean, presumably you've seen there are presumably contingency plans in place if the police try and come in with force again. Is that right, Edward Chin?
Yes. Now, I also talked to some SMEs. Not all SMEs are against Occupy Central. And one person who is actually go to the same high school as I do and same as Benny Tai actually called me up and say, hey, I know Benny is too busy. Why don't I talk to you? And this person owned like 20 stores across Hong Kong. And the fact is that he is also hurt by the what I call the last stand ruling class. The 0.01% of the Hong Kong population, the 700 families that control the electricity, real estate, and whatnot.
So there are SMEs and there are businesses.
They are people, SMEs, yes. And they support Occupy Central.
Okay,
what they are saying is that perhaps we could just open one lane on both sides and then, you know, keep on protesting. And then they're also fighting for these guys who control the rent. So it's not like what Mr. Stanley Lau said, that they could bring in someone to use perhaps a brute force as a last resort.
Now, if that happens, how about the question I asked? From your experience on the streets, am I right? Are the people on the barricades better organized now? Are there contingency plans in place if the police come back with force, or will the protesters just leave?
I think it's very hard to know, because they all work in individual cells. And as I mentioned, our finance and banking group, we support anything that's pro-democracy in a peaceful way. So the bankers, the fund managers, after work, they just talk to individual cells, and then we work with different Catholic groups, and then we just give them rice boxes and talk to them. And, you know, just at least we show that we care. But more important thing is perhaps the government should reconsider open the civic square. Mm-hmm. Now, I read it on Facebook in the D100 internet network that that piece of land actually belongs to the public. And why do you need to put all these high bars to just block people from entering? And that caused the problem when they arrest Joshua Wong on the 26th. And that caused more people from getting more and more angry.
Just a point of clarification here. When your group is on the streets and you're helping bringing out rice boxes, am I right in thinking that's on places like Harcourt Road and Connaught Road Central? It's not on Queensway. Queensway is a different group, essentially, and it's sort of a, not directly part of Occupy Central itself.
No, and also the Mongkok group, it's
a little bit more controversial.
Yeah. You know, yes. The thugs that were brought in, you know, and again, it's conspiracy theory, you can say. It's actually led by the Beijing government to create more chaos. So these are the things that I think CY Leung's government should answer. And then he should just cannot really do a prescript thing and just read it from, I don't know, like a, have it broadcast. And then, you know, any responsible government could do a 360 dialogue. Just think about you work it for an investment
bank. You just said that they're different groups, Mongkok, Queensway, and of course the core group near Tamar. I mean, how can you actually, even if the dialogue had gone ahead with the Federation of Hong Kong Students, that wouldn't have been a dialogue with the protesters in Mongkok. It wouldn't have been a dialogue with this very small group in Queensway.
No, but I think if you reach a settlement, and the settlement would have to be a new report to the National People's Congress Standing Committee recommending a much lower threshold for nomination. You know, if you reach that kind of settlement and disband the protests in Harcourt Road, then you're left with two splinter groups that, well, they're not even splinter groups, they're independent, and the police can come in and clear those traffic junctions. I think it would fade away at that point because the goal would have been achieved. But if the government stands where it is and is not willing to file a new report with Beijing, and Beijing's not willing to receive one, and then say the actual situation in Hong Kong, to use the buzzwords, has changed, then we have stalemate, and that just means recurrent protests and probably more organized protests next time. I mean, the protesters have found new confidence out of this whole 2-week period, and they're not going to be confined to authorized marches from A to B on a Sunday along Hennessy Road anymore. They're, if it's a big enough issue, there's going to be this kind of protest over and over again until we get a democratically elected government.
Okay, some interesting emails I'd like to share. Backchat@rthk.hk is our email address. Okay, one from Gladys, who says, Carrie had to call off the talks. She can't afford to be put on the spot as to what room there is under the MPC decision to reform the election committee into the nomination committee. The truth would kill any support that may still be out there from anyone who still believes the nomination committee can be made genuinely democratic, says Gladys. And Li Ying, under the subject Headless Chickens, says, I'm not quite sure what tone to read this in, to be honest, Li Ying. Well, I'll just kind of read it straight. Yes, hooray to the students for their foolhardy courage, 60,000 holding 7 million hostage. But a movement with no leaders, no negotiation skills, slowly losing public support, impacting many SMEs as well as daily lives in protest areas, being used by the irrelevant pan-democratic parties, a Catholic cardinal, university academics led Occupy Central, and Apple Daily's Jimmy Lai, largest contributor to anti-government activities. Universal suffrage and resigning of CE won't stop further protests. Only political and economic restructuring will resolve the social inequalities, lack of affordable housing, upward mobility, tycoons' monopolies. Hong Kong has the highest income disparity in a developed economy.
To your listener, I would say you solve these economic and political issues by having genuine democracy where you can tough these issues out at the ballot box and remove a chief executive after 5 years if they're not addressing those issues. So, you know, whenever you look at the problems in society, and complain and say, oh, well, the government should just do something. Ask yourself, whose government is it?
Okay. Okay. Well, on the subject of mediation, email from Carol Peterson, professor in the University of Hawaii, who we
and also used to be Hong Kong professor at Hong Kong U, yes.
Who was on the also on Backchat program earlier this week. She says the government made a huge mistake in calling off the negotiations. Carrie Lam could simply have agreed to disagree on the larger issues and try to achieve an agreement on smaller issues this week. For example, the government could could have offered to swap locations for the protest, giving the students a large public area by Tamar, where they originally wanted to protest, in exchange for opening main roads. I'm not sure if the students will accept this offer, but it would be an important gesture by government and demonstrate that it is actively seeking pragmatic solutions to the current impasse. Andrew Chu, what about that? Doing a small things first, more practical things? That sounds good,
swap.
Doesn't it?
Yeah. Actually, from the mediation point of view, we have a triangle theory. That is, from a dispute point, we need to try to come up those smaller dispute or smaller issues that we separate to settle those issues. So that means we need to have a various meetings to have the dialogue to settle down those issues. Because if you all the issues is come up to one items, you cannot solve it actually. But when you separate it, so it will be more easy. And
in that case, you would presumably disagree with the government calling off talks. They should have tried to continue on the simpler issues first, shouldn't they?
I do think that most of the people will agree that have dialogue is better than just stay there, their point of view statement and no face to face interaction. And I would like to take the time to respond to a listener is Zhou Lau, because in Hong Kong the mediation ordinance chapter 620 state that our mediation in Hong Kong is using the facilitative model. So as a mediator, I cannot suggest what the government should do, what the students should do. Okay, so in this situation, actually, we need to find a facilitator, not as a mediator's role, and using the American approach is pseudo mediation, because in now the government is called off the meeting, so we need to have a renowned person that he can is stay in the shadow to help each other to build trust and to come up some common grounds so that before the meeting is openly to let the people know we need to have this background stage where we need to do. But of course, we need to try to funnel this renowned people. It is very hard to do this because I know this, some of those renowned people in Hong Kong, they do not want to step in this situation.
Isn't that an argument for example, not televising the talks or not making them so public? I mean, that's just going to lead to grandstanding, isn't it? I mean,
well, no, I think it leads to transparency, and the government had actually agreed to that part of the pre-talks talks. They said, yes, it can be open to the media.
But they won't be talking to each other so much as trying to appear good to the general population. One-to-one conversation or a conversation through a trusted intermediary surely is always going to be more productive.
I think it increases the probability of an acceptable outcome in the sense it's pretty low already, but at least then if the students come out and say, well, we compromised and we agreed to this or that, then you won't have distrust from the crowds that the students have somehow been co-opted or caved or threatened with their university studies or whatever.
You're very bullish on these protests, David Webb. You basically sounds like you think they should continue until CY Lung submits a new report to the Standing Committee, correct?
Or whoever the chief executive
well,
is.
Well, okay. Right. Okay.
But I agree with what Mr. Andrew Chu talked about, get a renowned person. In fact, I did recommend last week that they should bring in even John Zeng. Well,
what
he didn't sign the entire...
Henry Kissinger, I mean, you know.
I'm not sure.
He didn't sign the anti-Occupy Central Pledge. And also Wong Yuen-Long, the former chief justice. These two are... still highly regarded.
Now, Wong Yang Lung would be an interesting choice, wouldn't he? Yes, Wong Yang Lung is highly regarded across Hong Kong society, and he's no longer part of the Hong Kong government. But
More neutral, which is important.
And Wong Yang Lung is, as I know, that is also a very professional in dispute resolution area. So, of course, I do hope that he can act as this role because, in Hong Kong nowadays, and no matter from the side of the student or the government.
Andrew Lee is another one as well.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because nowadays, no matter in the society, if you have the political position, you just sign out and others will try to attack your position and to convince you to trust their position.
Okay.
So that is not a good atmosphere, actually. So we need to now, through come time, to we must to create a more suitable atmosphere to have dialogue. This is very important.
We've only got a few minutes left. I wanted to share some more emails. One, first of all, from, I don't know, Afsin, who says, wrong feed from your channel. Democracy is not necessarily good for the economy. Remember China's substantial growth for a decade and democratic capitalism of the US being responsible for the economic suffering of the last 6 years. Alan says, Carrie Lam was only willing to talk with the students as long as they didn't discuss any of the issues that prompted the demonstrations. This is a symptom of how democracy and accountability to the public is interpreted by this government. Over the last decade, I've been involved in local issues, trying to get the local government, basically Home Affairs Department, to modify or cancel various projects on Lama Island, the last being the Soku One housing development. In every case, the process has been the same. The government announces a proposal, invites opinions, maybe has a consultation. They collect opinions that support their plan and ignore or discount any opposing, refuse to even mention them in their summary reports. If you talk to them face-to-face, they nod and smile, but the only purpose of the meeting, as far as the government is concerned, is to ask you to withdraw your objection. The plans are made by the politicians and businessmen long before they announce. This is what Hong Kong is in... This is what democracy is in Hong Kong now.
Well, it isn't just, democracy,
just
is it?
A sham.
It's the lack of it, yeah.
Chi Ho says, I wonder what advice would the legal profession give to the protesters in respect to their actions of blockades. I wonder if the very foundation of the rule of law has already been undermined when the occupation of public roads becomes the order of the day because of the lack of democracy granted. Of course, execution of the law is another problem given the huge number of participants. This may not be the right path to democracy. Hong Kong has not reached a stage where expressions of opinion are forbidden. Instead, some reports from some media may be exaggerating, which may incite or advocate radical actions. Some students may indulge in their romanticized pursuit of democracy. I have no doubt about their genuine passion, but prolonged occupation, especially the blockade of roads, will turn people's sympathy into opposition as time passes. There must be better tactics instead of the occupation of roads. The students may have gone too far when they say they represent the Hong Kong people and their prolonged fight for democracy. I'm not one of the Hong Kong people they represent, says Chi Ho. Thanks much indeed for those comments. Backchat@rthk.hk is our email address. Stefan Ortman, we brought you here to talk about Singapore and Hong Kong, and we haven't even asked you about that, really. Haven't given you a chance. People say that, I mean, you look at Singapore, you look at how Singapore has developed, and you look at Hong Kong has developed. Do you think that the freedoms we enjoy are compatible with an authoritarian government, without complete democracy, without complete say in who the chief executive would be? What was your take?
I'm not sure how that links to Singapore, because I think Singapore is an electoral authoritarian regime, which does not have freedom, but enjoyed rapid economic growth similar to Hong Kong. I think it shows that there is no link actually between... necessary link between economic growth and democracy, but long-term or sustainable development or equitable development, which means that a society have not so much differences, yeah, is more likely to occur under a more democratic political system. And in Singapore, is similar to Hong Kong, has now high income inequality, the second highest in the developed world after Hong Kong, yeah. And a growing opposition movement and declining support for the ruling party. So actually, Singapore is quite worried that the Hong Kong's example could sweep over to Singapore in the long term. Yeah, at this point, it's a divided opposition movement, and it's not has not the freedoms to pursue a similar situation in Hong Kong.
Yeah, I think Singapore is an outlier, and I'd have to disagree with Stefan. I do think that if you want to have a high level of economic prosperity, not just growth, but prosperity, because China has growth, it just doesn't have prosperity. It's still at 20% of Western levels.
No, I didn't mean to say that. I agree with that.
But I think Singapore and a few oil kingdoms where they can just spray money around, those are the outliers to the general rule, which is that you can't have high levels of economic prosperity without democracy. Show me any large-scale successful economy that doesn't have democracy. There isn't one. So, and to one of your listeners who said that, oh yes, but China's been growing successfully, that's only because they wrecked the economy for 30 years after 1949 and started with an extremely low base, but they're still only up to 20% of Western levels of prosperity. Yes, they got things in the West wrong in terms of the conditions that set up the global financial crisis, but the beauty of the system is that those things can be corrected through legislation and new governments. through the democratic process.
Okay. Well, this debate and this meeting will go on, even if it's not going on. This evening, there will be a rally, as we mentioned, at 7:30 this evening. It'll be interesting to see what happens there in the newly dubbed Umbrella Square. In the meantime, thank you very much indeed to our guests this morning, to Stefan Ortmann, visiting assistant professor at the City University, to David Webb, Andrew Chin, Andrew Chu, and earlier also speaking to Stanley Lau, from the who's chairman of the Federation of Hong Kong Industries. Danny, thank you very much indeed. Here's the weather before we go. Mainly cloudy, dry, with sunny periods during the day. Maximum temperature about 29 degrees. Sunny periods forecast for the next couple of days. It's going to be slightly cooler early next week. Back chat back at 8:30 on Monday, and I think we're going to be talking about the umbrella movement. The readings now 26 Celsius. The relative humidity is at 55%.